You are listening to the Monday Morning Show on Northern Community Radio. We're KAXE, KBXE, your independent national public radio affiliate. That's Brandi Carlile, Raise Hell. We're dedicating that, right, to the yes. character that both Michael and I got just transported by. Not that Bax isn't great, but Jules in the new novel that's coming out tomorrow. It's called Tradition by Brendan Keeley. He's a New York Times best-selling author, and he joins us now. What'd you think of the dedication?
Oh, my gosh, I love it. Perfect. And what a way to start the day, too.
I know. I feel better. So this book, so both Michael and I read this last week, right when the Bill Cosby trial was ending up. I mean, it just was echoing and reverberating all of this stuff. And I'm so glad that these issues of power and sexual assault are in a form about young adults as well, because I think we're talking about it as older adults right now, but maybe not as much for younger people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I start all of my books with a question, and for me, it was this issue of how do we better listen and support women, especially those who are speaking up about misogyny, harassment, abuse, and how can men in particular be better feminists? But I wanted to set that exactly, as you say, as a novel, to try to answer that question in some way, as a novel about two teens who are navigating the, you know, destructive effects of unchecked misogyny in their boarding school. Because I think teens, you know, as we've seen in the news also, have a special ability to wake up the culture that's been sleeping for too long, the adults.
Well, tell us about this place of Tradition, where they're at, this boarding school, and what it's like there, Fulbrook.
Yeah, Fulbrook Academy is one of those time-honored, old, steeped in tradition boarding schools somewhere in New England. And it's, you know, history kind of looms over the branches. It's in the halls. They have stained glass windows. It's this school that feels like it's an epicenter of power. And it is an epicenter of power, and in all the wrong ways as well, because some of these sort of traditions at the school end up being rather dangerous for some of the young women. And so, just as in real life, I've done research at boarding schools to write this book, there are some traditions that, you know, administrators and teachers kind of look the other way and allow kids to behave in ways that are pretty dangerous. And in this book, there's a tradition that, in particular, is a setup for what may be a possibility for date rape.
And that setting is the winter ball where people get matched up, freshmen and seniors.
Exactly.
A dangerous combination.
It is. And I was stunned while doing research how many schools still, you know, still engage in this activity. And the idea behind it is that, well, you know, the seniors have been here for so long, and the first years are you know, new, and they might not know anybody, and so it could be a cute kind of pairing. But it's exactly as you say, it actually sets up an opportunity for something that could be quite dangerous.
So let's meet these characters. We did dedicate that song to Jules Devereaux, and she is certainly the powerhouse of this story. But Bax is super important too. Tell us about them.
Yeah, sure. So Jules is in her final year at Fulbrook, and she's I consider her a kind of social justice warrior. She's smart, she's determined, she's confident. She's kind of putting her head down and just trying to get through her final year to get off to college. And part of the reason why she's putting her head down is that though she's been one of the more popular students in the past, after she broke up with her popular boyfriend the year before, she kind of started finding herself on the outside of the circle. So, you know, as she starts her senior year, she's the same person, but she doesn't have the same social power and clout that she's been accustomed to. And Bax is just starting for his first time at Fulbrook, but as a postgraduate. So he's also in his final year of high school, but he's also an outsider, because Bax is someone who feels incredibly out of place at this wealthy boarding school. He comes from a sort of blue-collar background in Ohio, and he's a sports star. He's someone who plays football and hockey, but he's holding on to a secret from the year before that he feels pretty guilty and ashamed about. And as he starts his senior year, he's realizing maybe for the first time, that he's been cultured to be a kind of violent machine.
And he is, he's a person that is out of place and out of time in some ways. And I think with both characters, what my sense was, there was an evolution of them struggling with identity and then moving forward with courage.
I appreciate that. I think that's really part of the story here. Back to that question that I'm trying to answer in the book. For me, I think that one of the ways we begin to address the problems that we have right now in across the board in institutions, whether that's in movies or, you know, celebrity status or even in education, the idea to begin to address these problems is, I think, for men in particular, to address their identities and begin to listen more, begin to practice empathy more, begin to believe the stories that women have to share. And then, you know, begin to make that shift. And that's what I hope this book does. It kind of charts a way for young folks in particular to begin to make that cultural shift.
We're talking with Brendan Keeley. His new novel for young adults is out tomorrow. It's called Tradition. Can you talk more about kind of this culture of sports and what Bax is kind of going through in this story?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I played sports growing up, and I was in all too many locker rooms where there's a kind of culture of aggression and competitiveness that is, on the one hand, important. I really understand why and how we can learn from sports and their sense of being the best you can be. But they also, there's a darker side, and especially when it comes to some of these male locker room spaces, the way that the guys encourage each other to talk about women, the way they encourage each other to try to think about dating women or sexually interacting with women in a competitive, aggressive way, it becomes a kind of feeding ground for some pretty toxic behavior. And Bax is stuck in the middle of all this. And on the one hand, he wants to make friends. He wants to fit in. He wants to feel like he's a part of the world that he's accustomed to. And on the other hand, he's slowly beginning to form a relationship with Jules, a friendship with Jules. And as he's forming that friendship, he's beginning to feel a little bit out of place in this conversation where guys are heckling each other about women and heckling women behind their backs.
You know, it seems like, so Bax is kind of learning from Jules, seeing the world maybe from her perspective, and then Jules is sort of seeing that she also has some power in terms of being heterosexual. Yeah. Tell us about that, where she starts to look at things a little differently, too.
I really, really appreciate that question, because I think it's essential whenever we talk about issues of abuse of power that we don't isolate them in ways, that we always look at them in intersectional ways. So I really appreciate your question, because Jules is close friends with another student, Javi, and Javi is a student who is homosexual and is happy and proud, and it's not a story of sadness in some ways, and yet he feels that way at this school because he has to be more repressed at home, where his homosexuality is not accepted. And even at the school, in fact, though on the outside, on the surface, people are accepting, in fact, the matter is he doesn't have it. He can't be as free as Jules. In one moment, he shares with her, hey, you can make out with anybody you want on the front steps of the administration building. And though people might, you know, say, cut that out, they're not going to have the same response as if Javi and his boyfriend were making out on the steps of the administration building. And that shift in power is something that Jules is recognizing that she, too, has. And so I appreciate your question so much, because I think it's important for us to think in those intersectional ways as often as we can. And I mean, I try to think about that with regards to race in particular. One of the things that I think gets forgotten about when we talk about the Me Too movement is that Tarana Burke started this movement more than 10 years ago. And she's a black woman. And we have to remember, I think, that all too often we don't do enough justice of speaking about race in these moments and about heterosexuality and homosexuality. So thank you for that question.
I found your writing about sexual assault and the experience of sexual assault to be very profound and disturbing. As a man, how were you able to write that from a woman's perspective?
Oh, thanks. That's a really great question as well, because on the one hand, I was terrified, and I think partly because it is all too pervasive in our society. It's an experience that all too many women have experienced, and so you know I have to take it incredibly seriously to write about an experience that I personally have not had. I have engaged in similar kind of territory in a previous book, and I again spent an enormous amount of time doing research, interviewing people, and then after writing scenes, having counselors and other professionals read through the scenes and give me feedback. But again, also part of my job as a fiction writer, I think, is to try to be as empathetic as possible. And in that sense, it's almost like being a method actor. You have to sit in the space as if you're in reality in that space. And that's part of the work. But again, I can't do that alone. I have to get a lot of help from others. And so for this book in particular, I had many, 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 many women and counselors read through the book to help me make sure I tried to get it as right as I could.
Let's talk about kind of the aftermath. So it's an interesting... It's just making me think of some of the things that came up even over the weekend in our popular news, pop culture. You know, Ronan Farrow's on Bill Maher, and Bill Maher's asking him if we've gone too far with the Me Too movement. And, you know, with Jules, she is sexually assaulted, but it's someone she has dated before, and that kind of gives the people in power the license to not believe her. And I wonder if you can talk more about that.
Yeah, no problem. I think there's a little bit of a danger of quantifying movements like this and saying something like, "Oh, have we gone too far?" Because what it means is again that you know the people in power are offering crumbs to the folks who have less power, and they're saying, "Now you've gotten enough. Enough is enough." That worries me, that kind of attitude, because we can never have done enough to try to correct the imbalances of power here. The fact that Jules's boyfriend or ex-boyfriend is the one who assaults her is again all too often the case. So many of the moments of harassment and abuse and violence that women suffer are from people that they're intimately involved with. This is true in quote unquote more minor, smaller incidents, but it's also true in the most devastating of all. The horrifying fact that I learned while I was researching this is that in the course of 3 years, more women die from homicide from intimate partners than all the people who died on 9/11. That's a horrific figure. But to think about how power works, there's never going to be enough time where we've spent enough time thinking about how to correct the imbalances of power, how to begin to teach all of us to practice empathy more. And this is something that Jules' story is really all about, is that, in one of her first lines is, "Just because I call it home doesn't mean it's somewhere safe." And I think... there's never going to be enough time, Bill Maher, for us to do the work we need to do to make these places safer.
You know, you see what happens to Jules right after she is assaulted and how it changes who she is. And she finds the strength she has even just like one sentence from a teacher kind of makes a difference. Her teacher says, you know, she can see the change in her and that's she has more potential than that. But I wonder if you would talk about how you wrote that or what you see when something like this happens and you really aren't able to tell someone or get any sort of justice.
Yeah, you know, so I worked in a high school for 10 years and there are teachers out there and in these boarding schools as well who become lifelines for young people. And in some ways, I really wanted to make sure that there was a character in the story that all the adults aren't villains. You know, some of them really are doing their best, but even their best sometimes doesn't mean delivering justice. And in fact, I think that's what makes the book a little more realistic, is that I don't want to sell a false bill of goods to the young folks who are reading the book and to adults who are reading the book, that just because you speak up and just because you tell your truth, justice will be served. Sometimes that doesn't happen, and I think all too often it doesn't happen. And so while on the one hand it's important to try to say something, it's important to seek out the support you need from wherever it is that you can get it, it's also realistic to look at the fact that all too often we don't get this justice, and that's part of the problem. And so again, you know, she might not have received the full justice she should have from the institution, but she does empower herself to be able to speak up and recognize that it's not the institution that's going to give her power. She can actually find power within.
Brendan, this book is for young adults, but I feel like, you know, Michael and I are surely adults here, and we enjoyed it just as much. Do you find your readers are of all ages, or what is that like?
I feel incredibly grateful because, again, as someone who came out of education, I certainly care about young people, and they're sold as young adult novels, and I primarily try to reach young folks with novels that are about social justice issues. But I find, in fact, that I'm in conversation with adults about the books almost as often as I am with young folks. And I think that says something, too, about the kinds of books that are coming out of the kinds of books that are about realism that are coming out of the young adult market. I think they're hitting a lot of notes for a lot of people and a lot of adults out there. And I'm so grateful that I get to be in conversation with them because though the characters are teenagers, sometimes they're speaking about things just like the Emma Gonzalez's of the world. They're speaking about issues that many of us care about who are adults. And so I feel really grateful that I have a lot of adult readers for all of my books, in fact.
You can find information on all of Brendan Keeley's books at his website, brendankeeley.com. The latest novel for young adults is Tradition. It is coming out tomorrow. We sure appreciate you talking to us today, Brendan.
Thanks.
Thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
This Real Good Words interview is made possible in part by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota.